Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and my favorite time of the week with my favorite person of the week.
Good evening, Carolyn. This is Richard.
I love it. You know who my favorite person is, huh?
Well, I don't know. I take a punt. It's usually me that's here with you, so.
Indeed. My favorite person of the week. I need to give you a little prize for that, I suspect.
Really?
Yeah.
Should I wait for that or what?
No, I wouldn't wait for it.
Okay.
Just expect it at some point.
All right.
Well, I think today should be a very interesting show. And there was something that I had read that got me asking some questions about what's called traditionally the Last Supper, that meal that Yeshua had with his apostles and perhaps disciples, I'm not sure. And I had some questions around that and spoke to Yeshua about the conversation that he had with his friends on what is known as the Last Supper. And as far as what I had been taught as a child was that this was in the Jewish tradition, a Seder Supper, that was a celebration for the coming feast of Passover. And so I wanted to clarify that, make certain that that's what was happening during that particular time. And I'm sure those in the audience would remember from their teachings, perhaps as a child, that the Seder Supper represented a time in the life of the Jews that was a memory, you might say. They were celebrating a memory of when they were given the word by God to leave Israel. I mean, not Israel, but Egypt. And it was a moment of great joy for the Jews that they were able to leave captivity. And so the word came so quickly that the Jews didn't have time for their bread to rise for the next day, and so they took with them unleavened bread. And it's one of the reasons why they eat what is called matzah today to represent that point of time when the Jews left in a hurry. So we want to know some things from Yeshua, that being one, if this was a Seder Supper, and some other information. So, Richard.
Yes.
I'm calling upon you if you would connect with Yeshua. Actually, yes, Yeshua seems very interested in discussing this, as there are some things that haven't come forth to us through the Bible, and he really felt excited about discussing this. And so as you connect with him, Richard, I would like for you to do as you usually do, because it is such a beautiful you might say, activity, and that is, number one, to connect with his energy. And so while Richard does this, those beautiful people who are listening to the show, I would like for you, so that you can get the most out of what we're doing tonight, call Yeshua into your own hearts. See a picture of him that you connect with. See it in your third eye, that place in your forehead that we call the third eye. And feel what Richard is describing as his essence, Yeshua's essence. Feel it in your heart chakra so that you can become as close as possible to this individual that we know and love as Yeshua, because I just sense that there are many people out there in the audience who either have supported Yeshua during his life as an Essene and perhaps as a cherubim, who usually came to earth to support those beings sent forth from his soul. And there were many who walked the earth at that time who heard his messages, who followed him and was taught by him. And what I am hoping through this particular show and Richard's discussion of his energies, that you will begin to remember your connections that you had with the lifetime of Yeshua. So with that in mind, Richard, if you'd be kind enough now to describe his energies to those who are listening, I would appreciate it.
It's quite hard for me to speak, actually. Well, most people listening to the show are probably aware that certainly we connect with Yeshua at least once a month or so, because he brings forth these messages for the full moons and many other events. And in fact, we connect with him quite frequently in our work. However, tonight he is sending forth, it's like he's come very close. I feel his energy very powerfully, and part of what is coming forth is this incredible love that's pouring forth. It's almost bringing tears to my eyes. It's so intense, such an exquisite sense. And so there is this great power and also a gentleness, if you can imagine that combination, and love. It's an exquisite experience, not something that I have felt from him in this way before, and yet it's so clearly his energy because of that strength and yet you might say gentleness, delicacy, if you wanted to use that word. But the love coming forth is extraordinary. Not something I normally experience when I connect with him in this way. It's something quite special.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Richard. And what is he is saying to me now, that he's sending you this love, but he is also sending this love to all who are listening on the radio show. And hopefully it is this moment that he is sending this love, that all those who are listening can feel it into their heart center, that we are all joined together. It is like a family. It is like a family circle. And if you take a moment, you may even feel a message that Yeshua is giving to each of you in the audience. So you don't hear this message as someone who is speaking to you like I am. You feel it in the heart center. You feel it coming from the right side of the brain. It is an intuitive sense at first. And if you meditate, and you meditate regularly, you might hear what he is saying as a direct voice, because we strengthen those connections, so to speak, through meditation. And I am hoping that those in the audience who are so attuned feel this love that Yeshua is sending forth. He is desirous that you feel his love, because he is saying that he truly loves each and every one of you as he loves everyone upon the planet. But he especially stands behind those and encourages those who are working towards their own spiritual development. And so with that, we will begin. And the first thing that I would like for you to do, Richard, if you would be kind enough to do this, is to take this message from Yeshua that he wishes to bring forth.
And he is saying, Yes, I am here. And as I indicated, I wish to share with the two of you and all of those listening the true essence, the true unfolding of what occurred at that time, because it has been widely spoken of in your Christian traditions, ostensibly based upon what I brought forth, what my life was about. And so I wish to bring forth the truth of what unfolded. And it was very valuable that Carolyn brought forth that history of the origin of the unleavened bread and the traditions of that festival at what you know of as Passover, because this was an important tradition within the Hebrew community of my time, and indeed continues to flow through to this day. And so that gathering was, you might say, the traditional gathering in one sense that those of that tradition, those of that faith, you might say, undertook, celebrated at that time. And so that was the underpinning, if you will, of the unfolding of that gathering. Yes, those that were sharing that event with me were those who were my friends and those who were working closely with me to develop some of their own skills and abilities and understandings that they might go forth and continue the work that I had in essence begun or in many ways reawakened for people. And so the underpinning of that event was that Jewish, that Hebrew tradition. And so the bread and the grape juice, really, because that is what we used. We called it new wine, but really it was grape juice. It was unfermented. And so the celebration was built around the use of the unleavened bread and grape juice, or new wine. And so this was the basis of it, and I used that opportunity to share some understandings with those that were present. As you know, we all understood at that time what was about to unfold, even though the details of it had not unfolded, because those of the Essene community had the ability to see into the future, and these events were very proximate, you might say. We were very clear about what was about to unfold. There were no surprises in all that unfolded, and so we knew what was about to happen to me. And so I took the opportunity to have them understand that it was important that they go forth from that moment to take forth the things, the teachings that I had shared with them. And so in a sense, what I was saying to them was that they should view the sharing of this bread and wine as a sharing of, you might say, a communion, a connection with me, a connection with the teachings that I had sent forth, that I had shared with them and shared with others, and that they should now go forth. And in that sense, they would be going forth representing me, being examples of what I had taught them, so that they could assist others to connect with those teachings, the truths of going within, of connecting with the truths within, and the skills and abilities and understandings that could come forth from that. And so I said to them that, in a sense, the sharing of this meal and the sharing of this bread and new wine was a celebration of that moment when, in a sense, they would go forth as me, go forth as representatives of that teaching. And so it was not that, in some sense, that bread and wine truly represented my body and my blood. That was not the intention. The intention was that it was a form of celebration based in that Jewish tradition, but it was a marker of sorts, a marker of the time when they would need to stand in their own truth, their own knowledge, their own wisdom and understanding, and go forth and share that knowledge with others. And indeed, many of them did so, as you well know. And so this was the basis of what was shared at that time. Not a great deal of new knowledge or information or wisdom. That was not the point of that moment. That moment was simply, in a sense, calling those that were around me to step forth in their own truth and understanding, with the knowledge and understanding that in some form I would no longer be amongst them. It was not anticipated that I would die in that event, and indeed I did not, as many of you know. But my days of my ministry, you might say, were at an end. And so I would no longer be present in that area of the world doing that kind of work for very much longer. And so it was a marker that they, in a sense, understood and accepted. And so I wanted to come forth and provide this explanation for you to understand a little more clearly what that event was about. And so it is.
Thank you, Yeshua. We really do appreciate you coming forth and telling us this. I would like to discuss, if you would, this concept of going within. There's so much around that. They are words that you have used a lot, asking individuals to go within and find their own truth. And yet, the way it has turned out, shall we say, church dogma believes that or teaches that we should follow more of this dogma that they tell us. So I'd like for you to clarify that. Explain to us, if you would, what you meant by going within.
It has been quoted to you that I had said that the only temple that you need is the physical human body, and indeed that is so. There is no need for any individual to have someone intercede between them and their Creator. It is simply not necessary. Every human being is an expression of that Creator. And this entire notion of original sin, that humanity is born in sin, is an utter abhorrence in my view. And it is all part of an organization which has gone down the path of inserting itself between God, as you term him, and the individual. And that was never anything that I taught. Indeed, we already had such activities within the Jewish traditions, where the priesthood had inserted themselves between God and the general populace. And a key aspect of my teaching was that none of that was necessary for anyone. And I'll mention that humanity has a long tradition of a priest class emerging and inserting themselves in some manner between the individual and their creator. You might say it began in Atlantis, where that priest class began to claim their abilities to create using the energies from those, you might say, laser-like crystals. That, in a sense, they inserted their skills and abilities and responsibilities. They claimed them for themselves, and in that manner inserted themselves between the individual and their creator. It also happened in Egypt, where we had the priest class, you might say, taking over from those great beings that sought to teach the truths of the one creator God, you might say, the ultimate creator, prime creator, which was in essence what Akhenaten was seeking to bring forth in his time. And so we see it in so many of the traditions of today, in the world's religions. In each case, you have a priest class which has inserted themselves between humanity and their creator. And so it is a pattern that is quite an old one upon this planet. And it is time, my friends, for this planet to move beyond this phase, where the individual once more remembers that connection to their creator. And so this is part of what I was teaching, that everything that you need is within you. As you begin to go within, and a good place to begin this is with meditation. And so many in the West have begun meditation and believed they should be able to quieten the mind, and find it difficult to do so given the world that you live in. And for most of you coming to this practice with some maturity of age, find this impossible, and so give up on the process of meditation. And I will say to you that you should persist in whatever form it unfolds for you, because simply the practice of spending some time with yourself quietly and going within gradually will begin to open some of these doors for you. And so I say to you all, take some time each day. Spend perhaps 20 or 30 minutes quietly in a place that you are comfortable and feel safe and warm. And simply spend that time going within in whatever form that works for you. Because as you keep doing this, what will unfold will gradually change. And especially as the energies continue to change upon the planet, impacting the functioning of your physical body, the functioning of your brain, and the connections that exist into the cosmos and beyond. And so I encourage you in your own way to begin to go within in whatever form that works for you, because all of it will be part of the process of reawakening to these truths, to begin to connect with the truth that you are part of that great creator being in the center of the cosmos. And so it is.
Thank you, Yeshua. We have people on the line waiting to ask questions, but there's something that I feel that is very important that I want to cover first before we get to our callers. And that is, I'm thinking in particular of that beautiful painting, The Last Supper, where there is a person painted to your left that some people believe is Mary Magdalene. And so can you comment on that, please? Was Mary Magdalene at this feast, and is she the one who is designated in that picture as the one sitting to your left?
Mary Magdalene was indeed present at that supper for several reasons. And indeed it is her that is depicted in that painting. As many of you know, she was my wife. But she was also my partner in my mission, and that is not so well recognized. We came together, you might say. We were actually born on the same day, at the opposite ends of that day, but we were born on the same day because it was an auspicious day, which ensured that we would maximize our skills and abilities. And so our coming together was, you might say, preordained, and we knew each other from a very young age. Some of you may know her father, Joseph of Arimathea, was my uncle, my mother's half-brother. And also her mother, Mary of Magdala, was really my first key teacher from a very young age because she was very deeply trained in the spiritual traditions. Few understand that her father was so-called one of the three wise men, Balthazar, who was the king of Syria at the time. And so Balthazar was Mary Magdalene's grandfather. And so Mary of Magdala was deeply trained in those traditions, and so we knew each other from a very, very young age. And those who worked with me at that time understood the depth of our relationship on many levels, not just that we were husband and wife, but indeed that the work that we did was done together, that she held the space for the work that I did in public. It was not work that I did alone. And so she was very much present at that supper and, in essence, was, you might say, anointed to take forth my work, though in truth we lived for many years together after that date. And so, yes, indeed, she was present, and it is true that Peter in particular struggled with our relationship and that a woman should be allowed to carry such responsibility for such work. And it was a struggle that he had throughout his life. So yes, indeed, she was present, and for very good reason. She deserved to be there.
Thank you, Yeshua. We'll get back to some other questions, but for now, I'd like to take some callers who have been waiting. Thank you so much. Christine from Austin, Texas is on line one. And your question, Christine.
Hi, how are you?
We're great, darling.
Okay, so my question is about the Holy Grail. What is it, or who is it? Because I think it's more profound than just being a special cup.
I love your question. Thank you. Okay. Richard, does Yeshua hear that, please?
Yes. The Holy Grail has taken on many meanings in your traditions. And it is interesting to note the life, you might say, that it has taken on. And you could argue that all have some form of validity. You could look at the Holy Grail as being, or at least the search for the Holy Grail as being the search by humanity to find the fundamental truth of themselves, because that ultimately has been the driver behind all of these searches, this drive to understand the nature of what it means to be a human being. And there is this sense that it is hidden in some manner within the Holy Grail. And so there are some who have considered the search for the Ark of the Covenant as being the search for the Holy Grail, and for some that has been true. There are some who believe that the Ark of the Covenant carries great secrets for humanity, and there is some truth in that. For others, it is believed to have been the cup that was used at the Last Supper. And for some, that has truth also. But for me, the Holy Grail is what we, that is, Mary Magdalene and I, expressed on that website, IamYeshuaReturned.com, where it is the coming together of the male and the female in a relationship whereby they awaken through that relationship their ability to travel the cosmos. Because indeed, that is a possibility that arises from what we call the sacred relationship. And she and I were examples of what that relationship can be, how it can be expressed. And there were others that came forth in a similar time frame of history, not exactly the same time, but within a few hundred years of that time, where they also came forth to express that relationship, and in so doing formed what you might consider that powerful sacred geometric triangle of sacred relationships, which set up the coming forth of that in your time. And so that, for me, is what the Holy Grail represents, that experience of what it means to be a human being in relationship with another of the opposite sex and to bring forth that expression. I will add that it's possible to bring this forth alone, and that is something that in time will be taught, but the greatest expression for me is in relationship with, for me in that time, with Mary Magdalene.
Thank you, Yeshua. So, Christine, was that all that you hoped to hear?
That was fantastic. That was great. That was fantastic. Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you for the question,
dear.
Thank
you.
Hi. Helen from California is online, too. Helen, your question, please.
Yes. Yes. Hi, Carolyn and Richard. What a fantastic show, and I'm totally feeling connected to it. And both you have asked questions, answered questions about the Holy Grail and whether Mary is at the Last Supper painting. That was an awesome answer. And my question is more like toward a personal, and I want to get confirmation about it. And I want to ask whether I was physically reincarnated on Earth in the lifetime while Yeshua was, and what was my name?
Well, we will ask him. Richard.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Did Yeshua hear that question? Or should I repeat it?
No, he heard the question. You were indeed present in that time. And, my dear one, you have already been told this. And as for your name, Carolyn, as you know, I struggle with names. I'm not getting this. I think Yeshua is willing to bring it forth. Are you able to get this?
I don't know. Let me find out. Well, what I'm hearing him say is the word Miriam was a name that was used to by parents to give to their daughters, that it was many of the women at that period of time carried the name Miriam. And so sometimes it gets confusing as to which Miriam that it might be. And Helen, it was told to you, this is Carolyn speaking now, it was told, Yeshua is saying that you were told who that you lived during that time, and were you also told the name?
You asked me, I'm sorry, Carolyn.
Yeah. When you were told that you lived during the time of Yeshua, were you also told the name that you carried at that point?
I had one lifetime hypnosis then many years ago, and I forgot about it until lately received Richard email about the past life session with you. Suddenly inspired me, and at the session, and I felt like I was saying I was at the scene of Jesus crucified, when he was crucified, and I felt like I was a little boy, and said
a
my
boy?
Name was was a little boy, and then my name was Aaron, and so I wasn't sure about the whole thing.
He's telling me that that was not the case. You were not a little boy, that you were a female at the time, and your name was Miriam.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm does more that, actually feeling
does that
re-
to does that relate to I mean, does that relate to you?
Yes, I do. I do feel more inclined to female energy, and yes.
And good. He is telling me the same thing that he spoke of earlier, is that there is a part of you that remembers this, of course, because it is part of your soul monad. And if you would go within and search through your higher self and ask that question, that it will confirm to you those moments. And I am feeling very, I don't know what the word would be, feel myself standing next to you during the crucifixion, and I feel your sorrow. And of course, it was a very great sorrow, because even though you had been told and given the concept of what would happen during the crucifixion, the sorrow of it overwhelmed you so. And Yeshua wants you to remember his words before this time, that he would go through this and he would not physically die on the cross, that you are carrying some of that sadness now. Can you relate to what I'm saying to you, Helen?
Absolutely. And that's exactly I felt before. I felt the ocean of sorrow and sadness, and deep sorrow, and quite a cry and a cry.
Yeah, yeah. He's telling me to tell you not to grieve over this. That you knew what would happen. You knew he wouldn't die. That he gave the appearance of death, and that he was revived inside of the tomb, and to meditate on it, and that you might remember that, and that his life is to be remembered from one of joy. And he wants you to feel the joy of his life, not to feel that he died in this agony, that, yes, there was physical pain, but he did not die in agony, and to let it go. Fill your heart with joy. And he is also saying that when you meditate, the next time you meditate, call on him. Now, were you there at the beginning of the show when Richard described his energy that he was feeling?
Yes. Yes.
He is saying, remember that energy that you felt within your heart. And when you call on him during meditation, see the picture in your third eye. Feel his energy in your heart. Call on him. and he will be there to answer all of your questions.
Gosh, and he almost read my mind, and yes, I was more surrounded by the sadness before, and I am Asian descent and Chinese, and so never really felt very close to Jesus. It's out of sudden, it's like awakened in this week, and so when I heard this show, I was just feeling overwhelmed and feeling meant to be.
You're remembering, Helen.
Yes,
you're waking
remembering. Oh, my goodness. And when you say, Carolyn, when you said earlier, was that you was with me at the crucifixion, or was he referred to Yeshua himself?
Darling, I was with you during the crucifixion.
Yes, I know that. Yes, I know that. Cool. And my next question is, has Yeshua ever been an ancient reincarnation in any known person?
Okay, Helen. What is your higher self telling you about that?
Yes, of course.
Okay, I wanted you to go within and pull that out. So, Richard, does Yeshua have some statement to make about the fact that at some point in his reincarnation, did he come forth as an Asian?
As you know, I am an aspect of that great being known as Marietta. And indeed, there have been many aspects with great power sent forth by Marietta. And it is those ones that tend to get tracked by history. And indeed, there was an aspect that came forth as an Asian. And indeed, there have been aspects that have come forth in all cultures. What I will also add to this is that what is not recognized is that not only Marietta, but other great beings that seek to be involved actively with the progression of humanity, you might say, maintain a finger of consciousness within the human experience continuously. And so there are aspects of Marietta present upon the planet at all times, though usually they are not what we might call a major aspect. They have only a limited number of soul particles. And they really come forth to, you might say, enable an ongoing monitoring of the human experience. And so, yes, there was indeed a major aspect of Marietta that came forth that was Asian.
Thank you for your question, Helen.
Thank you for the answer. It's wonderful. Very,
you're welcome. You're welcome, dear.
Very inspiring.
Okay, good night. Now, there is someone on line 3 from Canada, and I don't know if that name is correct. Grandi? On line 3 from Canada. Or Grandi? Who's on line 3 from Canada? Don't lose your place, dear. Is there a person by the name of Grandi or something similar to that? Okay. Now, let's go, since we're having problems with that, let's go to line 1 to Summer from Canada on line 1. Summer?
Hello?
Hello. What question can we ask for you, dear?
Actually, you know, I've been trying to call in for a little while, and I actually just got on the line, and I didn't know that I was on the question line.
Oh, well, this might be your better day. Do you have a question for Yeshua?
Oh, Can I ask anything, like even personal or?
Well, it depends on how personal it is. What? Tell us what is on your mind.
How can I best be of service? I've been really confused. My place here on Earth and feeling
That's a beautiful question. Let's ask Yeshua, because so many people want to be of service and they get confused and they don't know what they're supposed to be doing. So, Richard, would you be kind enough to ask Yeshua for Summer why she came? What's her mission?
And this is what he has to say. My dear Summer, there is a particular group of there are a particular group of beings present upon the planet who, in particular, feel driven to understand what their mission is, what their purpose is in this time. And that group are those beings that have come forth to support the preparation work for humanity. You, my dear one, are one of those incarnated cherubim angels that has come forth to assist humanity to prepare for this time. And so I ask that you send Richard an email so that he can connect up with you and explain what this means. This is why you are searching in this way. And it is the way that virtually all of the cherubim have come forth and connected.
Well, Summer, how's that for an answer?
Wow. I do feel like it's been my lucky day.
See, you were on the right line, weren't you?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's so funny because when I was trying to call in, I actually connected with another lady who was also trying to call in, and our lines just connected.
Got tangled. Oh, uh-huh. Well, nothing is by accident, dear. Glad to have been of service.
Oh, thank you so much. I actually made a friend, too, while I did this.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Now we have little Fraser from Washington on line two.
Yes, you do. And I'm the person who connected with Summer, and it did feel quite extraordinary. The connection was there. And I'd like to mention that just before that, there was a gentleman also from Canada who was trying to get through, and I had the same feeling with him. So it would be wonderful, Carolyn, if you could reach, or Richard could, to connect with him. He was going to try and
He's next online. He's next online, dear.
Wonderful.
We will be connecting with him after.
I'm glad.
And so what is your question?
Well, I suppose I may as well get to it.
Well,
years ago,
you might
many
as well,
years ago,
because we don't have much time left. What's your question, darling?
This Last Supper business, I think you have a message for us, don't you?
You mean me personally or Yeshua?
Both of you. I think you're both tuned in to the same frequency, aren't you?
I would suspect so. That's probably true.
Yes, and that's wonderful that you've managed that. I don't know what your relationship is, but the fact that you do work together successfully is what we're all trying to do on some level, and whether we're parents or spouses or children, or animals, it seems we're having a struggle, and yet through it all, the message that came through today from you about fear being our only obstacle, I thought spoke right to the core of the matter. Thank you.
Well, let me add that this is the time of the Divine Feminine, as you are probably aware. And we tread lightly upon the earth. For so many years, the Divine Feminine has been trampled upon and not always given the attention that she should be given. And so, being female today in this time and place, we are carrying a grand tradition. And I see the long line of the beautiful part that the Divine Feminine has played upon this earth. And I see you in particular as the priestess holding up the cup, the ceremonial part of being, in a sense, the Divine Feminine upon this earth, and desirous to connect to the Creator that made you. And so, my darling, walk in joy, walk in love, because that is who you are.
Thank you, Carolyn, and please God that we as women may not trample on men.
Indeed! I like that! Now, you want me to check and see if Yeshua has a message for you?
Thank you.
Richard, does Yeshua have a message for little Fraser?
I believe he does. I wish to encourage you to continue to step in love and compassion as you so clearly are, because these are the two most powerful aspects of the Divine Feminine. Indeed, it is compassion, which is an aspect of love, which the Divine Feminine expresses in such a powerful manner, and it has been so lacking on this planet. And so I welcome your contribution in bringing forth that compassion and understanding to not only your fellow humans, but indeed all expressions of life upon your planet. And so it is.
Thank you, Yeshua, and thank you, little Fraser. We're glad
you
called. Thank you for your
thank
question.
You.
And the last call of the evening is Grant on line one. Hello, Grant.
Oh, hi, Carolyn. Yes, I have a quick question. How many strands of DNA did Jesus have when he was incarnated, 2,000 years ago? And how many strands of DNA does he have now?
Well, let's see what he has to say. Richard, is Yeshua willing to comment on this?
I believe so. There are rumors or stories that indeed I carried more than the two strands of DNA that humanity carries today, and that is not accurate. I obeyed the rules of that consciousness when I came. Yes, I carried many soul particles, and there were those who were prepared to begin to teach me at a very young age to peel back the veils of forgetfulness, if you will, as rapidly as possible. And so there were some things done, you might say, in terms of the number of soul particles that I brought, the parents that I had, and, as I said, the teachings that were put in place from a young age that enabled me to reawaken my skills and abilities rapidly. And, as I say, none of that was connected to the DNA strands that I had active because humanity has been limited to two strands up until this time. And there are occasional examples where there have been individuals born in the last few years where a third strand has been active. However, this is, you might say, child's play in comparison with humanity's history, where before the fall in Atlantis, there were well over 2,000 DNA strands active. And science looks at the some 95 to 98% of the human DNA, which is inactive at this time, and they don't understand why. And indeed, it is the expression of the other strands of DNA in the physical, because not all of that DNA was in the physical. And so as you pass through the steps to prepare for ascension, that DNA will be reactivated for all of humanity. And so this is the real message about DNA, not the DNA that I carried at that time, but the DNA that all of humanity that choose the path to ascension will reactivate as part of that process. And I will add to this that part of the mission of Mary Magdalene and myself was indeed to bring forth some refreshment, if you will, of the human DNA through our children that would enable the human DNA to be reactivated in your time, because some of the changes that were made to the human DNA in your past meant that it could not be reactivated, and this has been corrected. This is not something that is widely understood. So this is perhaps the most important message about my DNA, my contribution to that reactivation process for you in this time. And so it is.
Thank you, Yeshua. And Grant, we have to leave. It's time for us to close the show. We wanted to get you in. And so all of my friends, I would like to thank you for listening. And Richard, I'd like to thank you again for bringing forth these messages. Thank you so much, dear.
My pleasure, and thank you, Yeshua, for all you brought forth.
Goodbye for now, all of you. Until next week, this is Carolyn Evers and
Richard Presser. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.